This is the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast from Advanta IRA, where we show you how to explore investments beyond Wall Street and open your eyes to new options for your portfolio. It's time to take control and give yourself the freedom to choose where you invest your money.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Today, we're going to be diving into investing in precious metals with Patrick Yip of APMEX. It's going to be a really interesting conversation for those of you that are interested in actual tangible physical precious metal investing. But before that, today on the download, we got some unusual news is what I will kind of coin this as. I was starting off with the literally unusual activity that was plaguing stock exchanges in the United States on Monday during trading. Several shovel companies had to have trading halted altogether as they were seeing a large influx of sale orders coming in for financial services companies such as Wells Fargo and Morgan Stanley had to have trading actually halted. And there were several others that were experiencing similar type of aberrant activity. However, by the end of trading, everything seemed to have rebounded for all the companies that were affected, and most everyone was well within 1% of their start of day trading. But certainly something very interesting. Experts are pointing to maybe some type of malfunctioning glitch or software glitch. These can be seen as targeted attacks at some point, but as far as all the inclinations right now and indications from experts, it seems to be that this was just some type of error. The woes continue for Microsoft. The Microsoft and the software and cloud computing giant has seen shares slip almost 30%. That's right, 30% since their peak in early 2022. The interesting metric that I saw while doing the research on this is that their shares were outperformed by both the S&P and NASDAQ stock indexes, which is just crazy to think about that two different indexes both outperformed a single share price of what has typically been a stalwart of performance on the New York Stock Exchange. So hopefully that can be turned around, that it is, they are seeing that the Azure, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, A-Z-U-R-E, their cloud computing arm, is expected to see significant gains in the next several years. However, they have seen some protraction in their market share as of late with things like with Amazon AWS and the Google cloud computing services still being the two main users in the cloud computing market. Now, when it comes to laying down at night, you may not necessarily think of the mattress you're laying on as being a multi-billion dollar company or one that might be in trouble, and it certainly isn't something to sleep on. I promise you I'm done with the puns at this point. But certain manufacturing giant in the mattress space, Serta, has filed for Chapter 11 for bankruptcy protection, which I found kind of interesting considering you don't ever hear about people like this filing for protection, but they are listing $1 to $10 billion in assets with almost an equivalent amount of outstanding obligations to pay, which are all coming due in the first two quarters of this year. So they have filed for protections. However, two of their creditors have sued to stop this bankruptcy protection and restructuring. Apollo Global Management and Angelo Gordon and Company are the two that are primarily suing with outstanding obligations to both of them, totaling somewhere in the neighborhood of about $50 million. So it'll certainly be something to watch out for. Definitely don't sleep on this news. I can't help myself, but I found it interesting nonetheless to take a look at that. Now, the other interesting part of news that's coming out today is that I'm sure anyone that has maybe a teenage daughter or someone that just likes pop music has heard there was an enormous fiasco with purchasing the Taylor Swift tickets for her upcoming tour that was being administered by Live Nation, with people actually signing up for different credit cards for different early opportunities to buy tickets, and then people getting locked out of the system, and the woes just continued for those that were trying to buy tickets for this Taylor Swift concert. Now, this in and of itself maybe isn't surprising, but what I did find surprising when I was looking into this is that the CEO of Live Nation actually got landed in front of Congress about this whole issue and debacle that went on with it. So to think that a Taylor Swift tour caused someone to have to be interviewed by Congress on the issues with it, I certainly found interesting. Now, the share price of Live Nation, ironically enough, has been on a three-day run-up leading up to this meeting that happened yesterday on Monday 1/23. So you know, this just goes to show that not everything that you would think would be indicative of something being bad actually causes share prices to dip. So Live Nation's still on kind of a run up with their share price, even though that their CEO was sitting in front of Congress yesterday talking about issues with their tickets purchasing platform. And lastly, on the download, in the vein of interesting and unusual that was coming out today, asteroid mining, something that I only thought you would see in the Jetsons or other type of sci-fi media, is actually moving forward. There is a company out there right now that is to begin testing and actually has scheduled launches in 2023 to start mining valuable minerals from actual asteroids. So again, that's going to be really interesting to watch to see how that works and to see if it is a viable route forward for people to for companies to utilize to mine various different elements. So today we had mattress giants filing for bankruptcy. We have the CEO of Live Nation in front of Congress because of the Taylor Swift concerts, and we have actual mining of asteroids. So it's definitely been an interesting day in financial news with regards to what is going on out there. So hopefully people can take this and make some decisions to help make the money in the new and alternative and alternative spaces. So this has been The Download. Today on the What is the People Poison Pill? This one I found interesting because I think I've covered what a poison pill is in previous podcast episodes, but I never heard of this version of it. What is a people poison pill? A people poison pill is a defensive strategy designed to deter or prevent unwanted takeovers from happening. Once an unwelcome approach is made to assume control of the target company, its management team reacts by signing a pact vowing to all resign if the deal somehow gets completed. The people pill strategy is a variation of the poison pill defense. This has been the What Is. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for another edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Today, we are very pleased to welcome Patrick Yip with APMEX, one of the world's or the U.S.'s largest precious metals dealers. And we're going to be discussing precious metals. It's something that I'm sure a lot of people with the amount of inflation and other issues going on right now in the world have looked at or heard about or thought about buying precious metals, whether it's just your wedding band that you own or you own a larger portfolio of precious metals. Most people understand the inherent value of things like gold, platinum, silver, and palladium. But we'll dig into a little bit farther of, you know, historically why these things are available, what they kind of mean to diversify in your portfolios, other options that are out there, you know, besides just, you know, holding a physical piece of metal or, you know, other types of investments that are out there. So we're going to cover the whole spectrum today. So Patrick, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Alex.
Yeah. So maybe give us a little bit of background about yourself. You know, I'm sure you didn't come right out of, you know, turning 18 and, you know, delve right into precious metals. Most people kind of have a bit of a trajectory when it comes to their careers. So give us a little bit of a background about yourself, about how you came to be in your current role with APMEX.
Yeah, so I'm the director of business development at APMEX and One Gold. APMEX is one of the largest online precious metals retailers in the U.S. The company has been in business for about 20 years. We've done about $15 billion in lifetime sales to retail customers. I personally have been with the company for about 12 years. I've held various roles with the company in merchandising, sales, project management, marketplaces, and now business development. Most recently, I began running the company's online investment platform called One Gold, which is a platform that allows customers to own vaulted positions of gold, silver, and platinum. And One Gold has done about 900 million in transactions in its first 4 years in business. And I was also involved in launching the first ever precious metals rewards credit card, and it's called the Bullion Card.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So, you know, I think it's, you know, kind of easy to understand what, you know, precious metals, you know, dealers are, but let's maybe kind of go into a bit of the, you know, benefit and history of, you know, owning precious metals. I think, you know, a lot of people kind of understand that these things have intrinsically held value for a long time, but maybe give us a little bit of history about, like, you know, like when these things started really becoming, you know, more of a widely like opened investment. You know, people think it's like, okay, you know, buy metals and stuff like that, but it really started to be drilled down, and a lot more derivative products on precious metals have started to come out in the past, you know, 15, 20 years. So maybe let's kind of go through a little bit of the history of it to explain to people, you know, some of the benefits and where this investment ideology kind of came from.
Yeah, so precious metals have been money for thousands of years, even in the U.S. too. You look at coins prior to 1933, they were actually gold coins circulating. So when someone had a $20, when someone wanted to pay $20, it was actually a coin. It wasn't a bill back then. And then silver was in circulation until about 1964. Right now, precious metals are not in circulation, but people still see the advantage of holding it. And one of the things I like to do is, you know, let's look at history too, to see, you know, what precious metals have done in the past and likely what they could potentially do in the future if history repeats. So right now you can look at anywhere in the news, you're seeing inflation as at a 40 plus year high. I think the latest numbers from the BLS was 7.1 annual year over year inflation. It's important to note that the U.S. actually had inflationary cycles in the past. We had one in the 1960s. We had one in the 1970s. And unfortunately, we haven't had a big one since the 1980s. Like I said, it's at a 40-some year high. But let's look at the 1960s. It actually took the Fed 9 years to resolve inflation. And then in the 1970s, during that inflationary period, it took the Fed 5 years to resolve inflation. And to resolve it, they were increasing interest rates, similar to what they're doing today. So where are we today? Right now, we're about 2 years into the current inflationary cycle. Just last year in January of 2021, inflation was only 1.4%. We're certainly, you know, going to hit January 23. We're 2 years in. I personally don't think the Fed has inflation under control. I think it's likely that even with the raising of interest rates, you're going to see inflation get sticky. Maybe it's not 7%, 6%, but maybe it stays at 4% for a couple months. And keep in mind that the Fed's target is to have a 2% annual inflation rate. So, you know, with inflation here, let's look at different asset classes too. So let's see what happens if you own stocks, what happens if you own cash, what happens if you own gold, just looking at past cycles. So with cash, I first of all would not recommend you have a large position in cash. I do recommend some liquidity, but don't keep all your assets in cash during an inflationary cycle. Because, you know, if you look at 7% inflation, 5 years of compounded 7% inflation, assuming the 1970s, that's going to erode about a third of your wealth. And then if you have the same thing that you had in the 1960s of 9 years of compounded inflation, that's going to erode about half of your wealth. So you don't want to hold a ton of cash right now in an inflationary cycle. You look at stocks, and stocks have actually, they were down in the 1960s in that 9 year inflationary cycle. And stocks, I mean by the S&P. And in the 1970s, it was actually flat, only increased about 4% for that 5 years inflationary cycle. And then lastly, let's look at gold. So in the 1960s, gold went up from about $35 to $200. It was actually pegged until about 1971, so it didn't trade freely. And then in the 1970s, it went up by an eightfold move from about $100 to $850. So if history repeats, gold's likely to do well in this next inflationary cycle.
Sure. So when you mentioned said that gold was pegged, what exactly do you mean by that? I'm not familiar with that.
So gold did not trade freely with open market. It was actually priced at $35 an ounce, and it just stayed there up until 1971 when the price of gold was allowed to trade freely.
Okay, gotcha. So essentially now it's just basically an open market, dictated by economic, supply demand, the price is, depending on how much the demand is for the particular commodity.
That's exactly it. It's all supply and demand right now.
Okay, so now with regard to kind of general inflation, it's easy to say, okay, the price of goods and everything, I think a lot of people, with the news cycles today are at least tangentially familiar with what, CPI and inflation is. The cost of goods is increasing. So, your gallon of milk, your gallon of gas, electricity, everything is getting more expensive in relation to what it was at a certain other given period in time. Now, how does something like precious metals help to alleviate that? Because an asset, if you were to buy gold, is the inherent value rising, or what kind of is the, let's say the 30,000 foot view of why precious metals can be of benefit to someone when there is an inflationary period?
Yeah, so I look at gold as gold and silver as the ultimate form of money. Gold is essentially has been the same today as it was thousands of years ago. It's basically, I look at it like a liquidity. You look at something like the US dollar or euros or whatever currency you're trading in or buying and conducting your life in. I think it's a gold's the constant. The currency is the one that's devaluating. I'm sure a lot of you have spoken with older generations, and they say something like, "Yeah, I remember when a cup of coffee was 10 cents, or a candy bar was a nickel." And you know, the candy bar or the cup of coffee really has not changed over time. What happened is the dollar has been getting devalued. And then there's something like, and I don't know the exact stat off the top of my head, but they said since COVID, I think about 30 or 40% of the money in existence has been printed. And that's kind of a shocking stat too. I mean, if you think about it, you hold US dollars, and what's the value of a dollar if the Fed could just create more of these? So a lot of times people look to gold and silver as a hard commodity, something that cannot be printed away. It's basically like an ultimate measuring stick. I mean, it's always the same throughout history. There's even a thing that says that there was an ounce of gold bought a fine man's suit back in the 1920s. And you take an ounce of gold today, which is trading about $1,800, will still buy you a fine suit today.
Okay, that's a really interesting analogy of saying, the inherent value of it rises kind of over time along with the different inflationary markers. Now, obviously, with a freely tradable asset, you have, you know, it's more of a play of a hedge against inflation, because I have people saying, oh, well, you know, it's not something that's going to make you a millionaire, but maybe it's going to something that could prevent you from being in the poorhouse. You know, it's not like you're going to buy gold and it's going to magically shoot up, or, you know, precious metals typically don't trade on that type of volatility, if you would say, but they do have a good, they are good harbingers of value. Is that kind of an accurate statement?
Yeah, I completely agree too. And I think it's important to look at precious metals like the ultimate form of money. It's not cash flowing real estate. It's not a dividend paying stock. Those have potential upside, but I would look at precious metals as a way to protect the assets you already have.
Okay, great. Yeah, because I believe it was Warren Buffett says, you know, gold is really pretty to look at, but it doesn't pay a dividend. Was one of my more favorable quotes from. I like some of his quips occasionally. So when it comes to, you know, buying precious metals, there's a lot of different ways to kind of look at this. And when I talk to clients, you know, there's a lot of, you know, confusion about the different ways that it can be done. And there are some, you know, at least from the IRA perspective, what we do, you know, there definitely are some things that need to be looked at, and I'll cover those in a few minutes. But, you know, from the perspective of someone saying, hey, I like to buy precious metals, you know, they go, you know, for so many people, they're used to thinking of investments of, okay, I go to my E-Trade account, I go to, you know, my Fidelity account, and I look and I type in, you know, search bar, look at, you know, precious metals. There are, you know, like ETFs, stocks, and things like that, that are based in precious metals. Now, that is not actually going out and buying a physical piece of metal. So maybe explain what exactly those things are and what they aren't. So if someone were to go and invest into a large, ETF, or they were to buy a security that, you know, is backed in gold, what exactly does that mean? I personally don't know the ins and outs of it. So I'd be curious to know as well from a professional standpoint of what exactly that is and what it isn't.
Yeah. So let me first say that there's a lot of different ways to own precious metals, and we could get into these more in detail too. There's buying physical metals is one way. You could get involved in a vaulted platform such as OneGold is another way. ETFs is a third way. As you mentioned, you could buy mining stocks, and you could even trade futures. There's a whole bunch of ways to get into precious metals. And like I said, we could touch into these later. But in terms of the ETFs, a lot of times when people get into gold and silver, like you mentioned, they want something that's easily integratable with a brokerage account. So they oftentimes go to the GLD, which is the gold ETF, and SLV, which is a silver ETF. I personally would not touch these ETFs, but that's up to you. I'll let everyone make their own investment decisions. But what these ETFs do, they largely is when you purchase a share, you're buying fractional ownership in a trust that owns gold and silver. So first of all, you're one step removed. You don't have that direct ownership of gold. Couple other things one of the things I really don't like about it is they said the metal is not insured. And this is just specifically referring to the GLD and SLV ETFs. There's plenty of ETFs out there. I'm not going to get into the details on all these, but they say the metal's not insured. So the last thing you'd want is to say, okay, you got involved in the GLD ETF, you own gold, something happens with that vault, and then the gold is damaged, lost, stolen, whatever, and your investment went to zero. I think it's important that you have insurance just in case the unlikely happens. And then another thing I don't like about it too, is you look at where they store the metal, and they said the metal could be held by a custodian, sub-custodian or sub-custodian of a sub-custodian. So it's like, Alex, if I said, hey, here, hold my gold. And then you said, here, I'll give it to my friend. And then your friend gave it to his friend's friend. Then I was like, wait, do you still have my gold or is it somewhere else? So those are some of the things that I personally don't like about the GLD and SLV ETFs. And I could get into other ways to own precious metals too, if you're interested.
Yeah, no, let's definitely kind of drill down on that. So when it comes, you know, to these ETFs, basically it's, a trust similar to, you know, what more people might be more familiar with, kind of like a gold REIT, if you will, where, you know, you buy a fractional share of this underlying trust, and that actually does have to own precious metals, correct? They actually do.
It does. Yep.
Tangible metal. And then it is stored, like you said, somewhere, but then it kind of gets into the, to the inception of, you know, the dream within a dream within a dream of, you know, people holding this stuff in a bunch of different places. But that's really interesting. So now are there other different, like, when you talk about the easily integratable options for precious metals into a portfolio, are there other options out there for people besides just kind of like those two that you mentioned? Are there slightly different ways, at least from the security standpoint, that people, you know, invest in precious metals in a marketable sense?
Yeah, and another way people a lot of times get involved in precious metals is through the mining shares. And a lot of times people say the mining shares have potential upside to the gold and silver price. So if gold increases by 5%, the mining share may increase by 10 or 15%. But I mean, obviously those you could integrate with any portfolio. All it is a ticker symbol. You could buy it just like any other security. The downside about some of the mining shares too is obviously, you know, you could get the upside, but you have to understand what you're getting into, because you're not making a straight play on the gold and silver price increasing. You're largely betting on a management team to operate a mine efficiently. And then you got to understand what type of company they are, what type of structure, what expenses do they have. There's a lot of variables in there. Obviously, there's people who make a living on this stuff, and there's people who get burned in it. So I would say be careful. If make sure you know what you're doing before you get into something like that.
Okay, so those are the two primary ways with, like, let's just call it the more stock forward ones. They are, you know, the ETFs or mining shares. Now, you know, specific to mining shares, how exactly does that stuff pay out? Essentially, you're buying just like, are you just buying stock in a company that mines precious metals, or is it a little bit different than that?
Yeah, so that's one way you could buy stock in a precious metals company, and obviously the stock price will go up just like many other stocks that you buy. Sometimes they pay like royalties too, so it's like a dividend where they pay you like a fee on everything that they mine. There's a lot of different things to be involved, but I would say, you know, like I said, make sure you understand. It's hard for me to make a right recommendation for everyone, because every mining share is different. But I would say make sure you understand like what you're doing before you just blindly throw money there.
No, absolutely. And, you know, we try to make sure that we're not giving anyone a recommendation on something to do or not to do. But I just think it's important to understand, you know, just the different options that are out there, because, again, you know, I'm kind of coming into this a little blind. While I have, you know, processed many precious metal purchases for clients over the years, I've always been involved on the tangible side of things, of, you know, buying a bullion bar, or buying a coin or something like that. You know, for my own edification, for our listeners, I just like to know what all the options are out there. So, you know, moving on from the nature of, you know, the more security based ones, you know, what would you say would be kind of the next step in the rabbit hole trajectory of investing in precious metals? What are kind of the next things that people should understand about the options out there?
Yeah. So another way that a lot of times people do it is they just buy the physical metal, and you could buy the physical metal through a company like APMEX. As I mentioned, we're one of the largest online retailers of precious metals in the US. We have about 25,000 products in stock, ready to ship, whether it's gold, silver, platinum, or palladium. If you want a sovereign coin minted by like a US government or the Canadian government, if you want a bar or a round minted by a private mint, we have all that available. The nice thing about physical precious metals is they're tangible and they're off the grid. So you buy it. We like to call APMEX like the Amazon of precious metals. You buy it, you add it to your cart, you pay for it, we ship it to your house. From there, it's yours. You could hide it in your house, put it in a safe, put it in the safety deposit box. No one needs to know you own it. You could easily pass it from generation to generation. Your taxes are self-reportable. I do recommend that you report your taxes, but it's basically a very private investment. So that's one way that you could buy precious metals. There are some downsides about that too, because most of the people I tell to get into precious metals, they start with maybe a couple $1,000s, then it becomes tens of thousands. And maybe if you're fortunate enough, it becomes a 6 or 7 figure sum. And we do have customers that spend north of $50 million with AppMex too, buying physical precious metals. But at some point, you're not going to feel comfortable, whether that's $100,000, $1 million, you're not going to feel comfortable having that metal in your house, because all it's going to take is one guy breaking in with a gun. And guess what? That metal's gone. So we created a new and modern solution to buy gold, and it kind of takes advantage of, or it has some of the benefits of physical with some of the security and insurance, and that's One Gold. And I could get into that too if you want me to.
Yeah, sure. We'll dive into that, of some of the different options. But one thing I would like to segue a little bit on is, specifically, we are, a self-directed IRA administrator, acting as custodian for a bunch of different assets. And for people listening, I just always like to delineate clearly that while, yes, if you want to buy precious metals personally, absolutely, you can, have someone like, them ship it to your house. You can put it in a safe. You can bury it in your backyard. You can make yourself a treasure map. Whatever you want to do with it is your business. But if you are going to be doing this through an IRA, specifically, you do have to go through the proper channels of making sure that it is properly held at a storage facility. We have a list of referrals. Most precious metal dealers, if they're reputable, also have, probably the same list of people that they would recommend to utilize. Specifically, you cannot hold those personally. And even if you are using something like what a lot of people like call a checkbook control LLC or trust, you still cannot hold those personally, even if you are administering your LLC or IRA funds directly. There was recent case law where some people got in very big trouble with the IRS. If you want to look it up, it's the U.S. v. McNulty. Husband and wife purchased precious metals with their IRAs. I want to say it was, better part of $500,000, maybe $250,000. It was several hundred thousand dollars worth of precious metals, stored it in their safe in their basement, and the IRS took umbrage with it, and they got both their IRAs disqualified and had to take very large sums with penalties as distributions from their IRAs. So I just always like to point that out. While the benefits of physical precious metals are numerous, some of the ones that you can see personally, if you are someone that likes to take physical possession of things, if you want to use IRA funds for that, there is a proper channel to do. You need to make sure you're doing it correctly. We can always certainly help you out with that. But just understand that, a few of the things that Patrick mentioned, if you are using IRA funds, just have to be taken into consideration. You can still buy the same metals. You can still, kind of have that same pathway forward. And another benefit too with precious metals for IRAs I'd like to mention to people is that if you want to buy these types of assets, you're under no obligation to liquidate them. So if you want to take a distribution and you have precious metals in your IRA, you can distribute the metals directly. We can have them shipped from your storage facility to you personally, so you don't have to liquidate them. So if you want to have a retirement plan based in precious metals, you can have them sent to you personally as part of either your required minimum distribution, as just a normal distribution, if you want to have that gold personally, and again, squirrel it away, bury it, put it in your big safe with all your guns at your house, that's fine. But you just have to extract it from the IRA first in order to be compliant with IRS regulations. So that's kind of the end of my blurb on that. I just always like to make sure that, when we do things like this that have the ability to kind of bridge the gap between personal utilization and retirement plan utilization, that if there are differentiations and rules, that we clearly explain them. So that was kind of, the point I want to make on that. So Patrick, we were kind of getting into the specifics of, okay, so, we go through, securities, there's, ETFs, there's the issues with that, there's mining shares, which I'm assuming have a very broad range of options with that. And I've actually had, interviews with people about oil and gas rights, and I'm assuming it's probably something similar to that, fashion, whether it's mining or extraction of some type of natural resource, precious metals being a natural resource. It's probably similar to that vein. So I'd encourage people to kind of go back and look, as I did an hour-long interview just on oil and gas rights and that kind of stuff. So I'm assuming you could glean a lot of info from that. Now, going on from that, there are other options where you mentioned that you have, kind of a bridge gap on, owning precious metals personally, the issues of maybe not wanting to have $10,000 worth of gold sitting in your house. So kind of go into that of maybe some stuff, some different options for people that are out there on, different paths forward with buying stuff. I believe you said that the one product that y'all developed was, a fractional ownership, or how exactly does that work?
Yes, it's called One Gold. And what we like to do is we like to have solutions for all types of investors. Some people like the ETF, some people like the physical, but we said, let's create something that's a little bit in between. So, obviously, as we mentioned with ETFs, it's not insured. Physical has its own difficulties too. So back in 2018, we partnered with Sprott Asset Management, which is a large alternative asset manager with about $22 billion under management. They're a Canadian-based company. And we created a new and modern platform called One Gold. many people call it like the Robin Hood or Coinbase of precious metals because it is so intuitive and easy to use. All it takes is a couple minutes and you can get started. You can start owning real physical gold, silver, and platinum. But OneGold is a platform that allows you to buy, sell, and trade vaulted positions of precious metals stored at your vault of your choice. So either in the US, Canada, Switzerland, or the UK. How we do it is we first have agreements with various vaulting companies around the world. So these are your Brinks, your Loomis, your Royal Canadian Mint, basically top tier vaulting companies. We then buy gold and silver on the wholesale market. So these are your 400 ounce gold bars, your 1,000 ounce silver bars. So imagine the big bars that you see in like a bank vault in your movie scenes. Obviously these are real bars. Probably the movie scenes aren't real bars, but we're buying a lot of this metal. We then list it on OneGold and make it available for sale. When it is purchased with a customer, it's owned 100% by the customer. It does not appear on OneGold's balance sheet. And the nice part about it is since we're selling you part of fractional ownership in a larger bar, or in some cases a whole bar if you have that much metal, we could sell it to you at a very attractive price. So 0.8% for gold over spot, and 2% over silver. So there are little premiums, and we could get into premiums a little bit more too. But basically, very attractive pricing. All the metal is insured by Lloyd's of London and the Royal Canadian Mint. It's regularly audited by a top five accounting firm. And the best part about it too is let's say you get into OneGold and you said, well, you know, I really like this physical metal. You could swap your positions and redeem it for any of the 25,000 plus products available at APMEX, and we'll ship it to you the very next day.
Awesome. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting kind of take on it of doing the fractional ownership. And they've done that with securities too. I think it's an interesting trend of how that's being applied to different markets. So doing, you know, fractional ownership of larger things for, you know, a cost basis reasoning is definitely interesting. Now, you mentioned something that was interesting there of pricing for precious metals. And that's something I'd like to get into as well, because I think a lot of people get a little bit confused when they see all these different options out there and they look at prices. Now, there's going to be some type of service charge, and we don't have to get into the exact specifics of it. But, you know, when you buy a stock, okay, you see it listed, you buy it. That's kind of easy for someone to wrap their head around. But when it comes to precious metals, there's going to be different fees and premiums that are going to have to be paid that sometimes people, you know, they look at gold and what's the spot price of gold today?
It's about $1,800.
So let's say, you know, you look at the spot price of $1,800 an ounce for gold, and you go, okay, great, I want to go buy an ounce of gold. And you get an invoice and you say, oh, well, that ounce of gold now cost me $1,950. Well, where does this other $150 come from? You know, why is there a premium on that? You know, what exactly goes into that? So in general, I think most of the market is relatively uniform on kind of how they apply these fees. Granted, every dealer is going to be different on what they exactly charge, but there's going to be some type of, you know, general construct to that. So maybe explain to people if they go and they want to buy physical precious metals, what they can kind of expect to see. And again, you don't have to give exact figures on maybe what you charge or what the industry does, but just kind of saying, hey, if you're looking at an invoice and you see that $1,800 at the top of it and you tick down and all of a sudden you're paying, you know, X, Y, and Z, what are some things that are baked into there that people know they need to look for, and then they can shop around and find the best deal for themselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. So with any commodity too, so the $1,800 that we quoted, that's what's the spot price of gold. So that's the current market price of gold. If you took delivery of like a 400 ounce gold bar, and keep in mind, this is probably a $800,000 item from the actual exchange. But like any commodity, you can't necessarily buy at the spot price. And the analogy I like to use is like coffee. So coffee is trading for about $2 a pound. If you went to Starbucks and said, give me a pound of coffee for $2, they'll look at you like you're crazy. And they're going to say, well, there's a cost in getting the coffee, you know, packaging it up, you know, doing whatever they do. I'm not a coffee expert, but there's parties involved that get that coffee from the field up until you get to the Starbucks store. Similarly, there's cost in precious metal. So you have the raw industrial bar off the exchange. This then has to get sent to like a mint, and the mint makes the metal in a super flat sheet, stamps it out, makes rounds, basically a round disc before a coin stamped. They stamp the coin. It then gets shipped to like an authorized purchaser such as APMEX. And then we sell it over to the customer. So there's various people involved in this supply chain. So there is a cost. You're never going to pay directly gold or silver spot. But one of the things I like to do is, in order to know that you're getting a good price, is ask any dealer, and any credible dealer will give you a price. So let's say you wanted to buy let's say a silver round, and silver's currently $24 right now. Let's say the dealer says, hey, I'll sell it to you for $4 over spot. Okay, they're charging you $28 for that silver round, which is basically like a round, 1 ounce of silver. Ask the dealer, if I sold this to you today, what would you buy it back at? And they might say, okay, well, I'll buy it for $1 over spot. So I'll buy it for $25. So you'll know, okay, you're buying it for $28. You could sell it for $25. You have a $3 spread in this thing if you were to buy and sell it immediately. I would say if the dealer is not able to give you a price, or if the dealer hesitates, you're probably not getting a good price. It's just common sense. It's like if the dealer is embarrassed to buy it back, you're getting ripped off.
Yeah, and I would say that there's probably a relatively uniform, again, everyone's going to charge different prices, but you know, there's probably a good amount of like a small degree of flow between like reputable dealers about what their, you know, vig on their pricing is going to be. You know, if someone's charging, you know, $3 over spot, and someone might charge like $275, someone might charge $310. You know, I would say there's, you know, once you start looking at the big people, you can probably, is it relatively easy to kind of drill down like what an accurate figure is, and obviously that's probably going to change from market to market depending on supply and demand, but they should all be relatively similar, correct?
That's correct. And I would look at companies that have the products and have like the price published. There's unfortunately that the precious metals industry is not regulated, so you do have a lot of these phone dealers that will not give you a price, or they don't publish the price on their website. And then you call them in and they kind of gauge you to like say, okay, how much do you know about this? And then they try to sell you weird, obscure things to bury the price. What you want to do is, you know, in terms of products on the gold side, you have some of the most popular products are the gold American Eagle, the gold Canadian Maple Leaf, the gold Krugerrand, and some of the 1 ounce gold bars, such as the PAMP or Credit Suisse bar. On the silver side, you have silver American Eagle, silver Maple Leaf, and then silver bars and rounds. Basically, those are the most popular ones. But sometimes you call these dealers and they'll try to sell you a 20 Swiss franc gold coin, which is, we sell those too, but they try to bury it because these are not 1 ounce of gold. They're actually 0.11867 ounces. So they try to confuse you a little bit. And then you're wondering if you're getting a good price or not. But I would say look at any of the big dealers. Atmex is certainly what I would recommend. Google us, like search us, like Google reviews, check on YouTube, check with any company you're buying from. Do your own due diligence and make sure that the company has good reviews.
Yeah, and that's what you brought up is something that I didn't have kind of written down that I wanted to discuss with you, but it brings up a good point, is that there's a lot of different products out there. You know, when someone talks about buying precious metals, okay, it's easy to say, okay, I want gold, silver, platinum, or palladium. Those are the big four. Well, you know, okay, well, you say, okay, well, great. And there's going to be a different premium depending on what you're buying. And I think that's where some people kind of get confused, is that, yeah, there's going to be a bigger premium on a government issued minted coin. So your, you know, US American Eagles and Buffaloes are going to have, you know, a higher premium than maybe, you know, just a silver round of, you know, minted by X, Y, or Z. And, you know, with that comes that, you know, the security of knowing that the government is backing the purity standard and the weight of the actual thing that you're buying. So I know you mentioned, you know, the Canadian Maple Leaves, there's the, you know, the South African Krugerrand, all the U.S. different offerings. You know, those are kind of easy, you know, stalwarts of the precious metal, you know, industry to say, okay, you know, if you're buying those, you're probably getting something safe. So long as obviously you're buying from a credible dealer, you know, that isn't just, you know, taking a die and stamp in their backyard and just whacking something to make it look like it. But, you know, those are kind of easy, but there's so many different other options out there. And I've run into clients before where I'm saying, you know, hey, you know, this isn't something that we can readily identify as something that is able to be owned by an IRA. And that's a whole different other issue. But what are some things out there? You know, you mentioned like the Swiss franc coin. You know, what are some things out there where if you're going to say, hey, I want to buy precious metals, and a lot of people don't really know the difference between X or Y, if they say, hey, you know, I'll sell you a $20, or, you know, I'll sell you, you know, 1 ounce gold coin, you know, that doesn't really mean anything unless you kind of know what exactly that is. So what are some things out there that, you know, and I always, you know, hesitate with this, but, you know, people that maybe aren't trying to act in a client's best interest, if you're just hearing this on face value, you know, what are some things to watch out for? What are some red flags that if someone's going out and saying, hey, I want to invest in precious metals, and someone's saying, oh, I can sell you this, you know, maybe, hey, a little bit of a discount instead of buying that, buy this, you know, what are some things out there to watch out for that people should be aware of?
Yeah, I would say watch out for any of your bait and switch shops. Like I said, on the gold side, I personally like Gold Eagles and Gold Maples. On the silver side, I like the 100-ounce silver bars. I just think they have a low premium. I think if you called the dealer and said, hey, I want to buy Gold Eagles or I want to buy a 100-ounce silver bar, and if they say, hey, I have this better product for you, you probably need to watch out for that guy, because you know a lot of these dealers, they're commission based on their salespeople, and they're trying to sell you the highest margin things to basically pad their pocket. They don't have your interest at heart, but you really can't go wrong with any of these top pop products. And like I said, look at your site. If you look at Atmex, you could see what we're selling a Gold Eagle for. Compare us to the other bullion sites too. Google 1 ounce Gold Eagle and see how we compare. And then you'll get an idea to say, okay, well, I looked at three or four dealers. They're all priced within a couple dollars of each other. Okay, I feel like this is a pretty good price. And it is a commodity, so it's going to trade at a very similar price. If there's a dealer that's $100 higher, there's something off with that dealer.
Yeah, absolutely. And are there any particular countries that, you know, obviously most big governmental agencies mint precious metal coins? I know off the top of my head, you know, Mexico, United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, China, they all mint, you know, precious metal coins. Are there any that are, you know, different, or, you know, ones that have had issues, or are they all kind of the same? It just depends on the availability in the particular place that you're looking at, or are most governmental issued coins relatively similar in their standard for what you're looking at?
Yeah, any of the government minted coins are fine. And we could go, like, the U.S. has the Gold American Eagle and the Gold American Buffalo. Up in Canada, you have the Canadian Maple Leaf. Down in Mexico, you have the Libertad. Over in China, you have the Panda. In Australia, Australia, you have the Kangaroo. And the U.K., you have the Britannia. Austria, you have the Philharmonic, and then South mm-hmm. Africa, you have the Krugerrand. Any of these coins are fine. They're all extremely popular. None of them really have any issues. But I would say that every coin does have different production things. So like if you looked at like something like the Canadian Maple Leaf or the Gold American Eagle, two of the most popular gold coins around the world, they're making a lot of these coins every single year. So the premiums are relatively low over spot. If you go down to Mexico, they have the Mexican Libertad, and the Bank of Mexico, which is actually the company that makes the coins over there, they don't produce a lot of these Mexican Libertad. So you'll find that a lot of times the premiums on these coins are going to be higher than what you see on a Gold American Eagle or a Gold Canadian Maple Leaf. But like I said, I mean, the important thing too is, and I own a few Libertads too as well. But I think the important thing to do, if you do decide you want to go that way, is look at what the dealer would sell it to you versus what the dealer will buy it. Look at that bid-ask spread again. And then like, if it's at a decent price, go ahead and buy it. If not, then, you know, maybe look at another product.
Yeah. But so sorry, go ahead.
I can't say with some of these coins, especially the Libertads, because they produce a lot less of them, you have the potential for the spot price to increase, but also the premium to increase. So you get basically the gold price increases, and maybe the coin becomes collectible too over time.
Yeah, sure. And that's kind of a whole other, you know, aspect of a play on precious metals. Granted, there are, you know, coins that are extremely rare and they have other intrinsic values besides just their content of their precious metals, which is, you know, not something that we really get into, but is an interesting play. At least, you know, the interesting thing on precious metals is that, you know, at base value, you're always going to have the bullion content. You might have the upside of it becoming, you know, if tomorrow they discontinue or they had a, you know, minting error on your particular coin, hey, you know, it's a bonus, but you know, you can't really bank on that. But you are, you know, at least, you know, banking on the intrinsic value of the precious metals held within them. So that's kind of that in a nutshell of the different ones to look at. And I really think a good nugget that people can take away from this at the end of it is that bid ask spread, like you said, you know, asking someone, you know, to try to figure out if you're getting a good price, because, you know, if that dealer is, you know, fleecing you on their, you know, dealer fees, you know, that's, you know, going to kind of show, if you say, okay, if I buy this today, what are you going to buy it back at? If I turn around and sell you tomorrow, like, I think that's, you know, kind of a good litmus test for that. And, yeah, it's something I never would have really realized. So we've kind of covered, you know, the three different main avenues of people buying precious metals. So you have the general securities, you have, you know, actually purchasing the physical precious metals, you have, you know, fractional ownership options, that you have it up, you call that what, One Gold?
That's One Gold. Yep, that's correct.
Yeah. Now, are there any other particular avenues that people can look at for, buying precious metals or any other different type of investment options that are really out there? Or is there anything that you'd like to enumerate a little bit farther on when it comes to, you know, buying precious metals for people?
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about IRAs too. I think IRAs is another good way that people get involved in precious metals, and maybe talk about a physical precious metals IRA and a One Gold precious metals IRA too, if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. From our perspective, if people aren't familiar, we can certainly hold precious metals for clients. We hold, I don't know the actual weight. I hesitate to use the word. We hold tons of the stuff for people because this actually is a weighted product. I know we hold hundreds and hundreds of pounds of it. We accidentally had someone ship a monster box to our office once, which was kind of a fun thing to figure out and get, the proper security on that. But it's definitely an interesting thing that people do. And it's one thing that I never really realized until my, career first started that you could even do this, of people holding precious metals in an IRA and the like. And it's definitely an interesting way to go about it. But you have to understand what it is and isn't. Utilizing an IRA to purchase this stuff, it is not something you're going to be able to physically hold. So you're going to need to understand that you have to have a working relationship with an actual a safekeeping storage facility. There are several big reputable ones out there. We encourage you, do your research. We don't have a preference on which one you use, but, make sure that you're comfortable with where it's held. And then ultimately it's going to sit there until you decide to take it as a distribution or liquidate it. But yeah, that's definitely one thing that you could do. Now, does your One Gold platform allow for integration of IRAs into it?
Yes, it does. Let me start with, and we touched on it earlier too. The way we like to look at precious metals IRAs, there's three parties involved in this. You have the precious metals dealer, which is like the ATMEX. This is where you actually buy your precious metals from. You have your depository. And as you mentioned, Alex, make sure you have a credible depository. Your own house is not a depository. This is basically where you store the metal. And then you have a custodian that basically manages the oversight of your IRA account to make sure that you're in compliance with all the federal laws too. And that would be something like an Advanta IRA too. But basically those are the three parties you need to have a precious metals IRA. With a traditional precious metals IRA, I mean, they're great too. One of the things that you need to be aware of too with one of these is that bid-ask spread too. Like, once again, you're trading physical gold and silver. So your spreads are higher with a physical precious metals IRA. And then another thing too is because you have that dealer and depository relationship, and many times that dealer and your depository are not going to be located next to each other or in the same state. So what happens is, let's say you own gold and you said, okay, well, I'm looking at the gold silver ratio, which we could get into a bit. And some people like to trade this thing where they swap gold for silver or silver for gold. If you had that dealer and depository relationship, you have to have your depository mail the product to your dealer, which may take a week. Your dealer then checks in the product, gives you the funds, and then you put it back with the custodian, and then you'll redeploy it. So it is a little cumbersome over there. So what we did with One Gold, and like we said, we want to create like a solution for all types of people. So we combine the dealer and the depository into one with One Gold. So you could basically buy directly on One Gold, choose where to store it, whether it's in the US, Canada, Switzerland, or the UK. You still need that custodian relationship too for that oversight of your account. But it's as simple as finding that custodian, funding your account or transferring funds to that custodian, and then that custodian will move the funds into One Gold, and then you could buy and sell however you want. And with One Gold, since you're taking fractional ownership in a larger bar, the bid-ask spreads, which we talked about earlier, are a lot lower than they are in physical. And then you could take advantage of, let's say you think that, hey, the Fed's going to increase rates, and maybe this is bearish for gold, and you want to sell your gold and hold cash for a bit. You could do that as well. You could all do it in minutes. And lastly, if you ever do want to take a distribution, you could redeem it, like we mentioned, swap that vaulted position on One Gold for your physical position and send it to your house. Obviously, that's a taxable event. That is the distribution. But we try to create basically the best solution, the easiest solution for IRAs with One Gold.
Yeah, no, and that's always appreciated on our end. We, it's one of those things where we haven't, and it's kind of, I think, endemic with precious metals just for the fact that the customer base is a little bit more old school, but there hasn't been a whole lot of innovation on the, buy sell aspect of this stuff. It's like, oh, I want to buy precious metals. Okay, well, here's a gold coin, here's money. Okay, it's, the transaction's kind of done, which is great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's worked for thousands of years since, you know, Egyptians and Romans, gold has been used as a standard of currency. So it's, you know, nothing inherently wrong with that. But, you know, like we've seen with everything else from, you know, different platforms that have made it easier to do investing into startup companies, that, you know, things like E-Trade that make it easier to invest in securities. You know, it's an industry that I haven't really personally seen much of a innovation in. So I always do appreciate when companies are looking to, you know, take the benefits of the underlying investment and make it easier, more accessible to people to, you know, ultimately invest in. Because like you said, you know, holding a cash position in times of high inflation is, you know, something that is going to just erode that wealth. You know, I think you said the 60s, you know, with the inflationary measures, you might have seen about half. And then the 80s, you might have seen about a third of your overall buying power of a cash position eroded away just from the inflation that was going on. So having some type of asset that at least keeps up to a better degree, obviously, you know, nothing is going to, inflation being what it is, nothing is going to actually match inflation with a degree of certainty. But there are things you can do to try to at least have something that goes, you know, bridges that gap from just saying a cash position is now worth 9% less than it was the year before. You know, something that at least, you know, typically rises, you know, and helps to, you know, lower that gap. So you're, you know, better protected, I think is, you know, good options for anyone. So, you know, kind of what we've covered, I really appreciate your time on with us today. Was there anything that you didn't think that, you know, we got enough time on? We have about another, you know, 5-10 minutes that we can cover some different details. Was there any specific things that you wanted to maybe cover that we didn't get a chance to kind of go over in the first part of the podcast?
Yeah, so we could talk about a little bit about allocation too, and we could, first of all, let me say that you know, a lot of times people get involved in precious metals and they say, okay, well, how much do I allocate? Is it 1%? Is it 10%? Is it 50%? What is that? First of all, let me say that it's going to depend. First of all, there is not a right answer. I do have family members in their 80s, and I recommend that they hold cash. Unfortunately, I don't like holding a lot of cash, but they may need it in the short term. So I would say first do your own due diligence. Set your own standard, but we like to look at history too. And one of the things we did is we looked at the past 50 years of history and to say what can an allocation of precious metals do. So we looked at 10-year average returns. So this is assuming you held on to the asset for at least 10 years. So I'm not going to reward gold in 2011. I'm not going to punish stocks in 2008. Let's normalize some of this stuff. But if you look at it, and most times people say if you wanted a portfolio, they'll recommend an allocation towards stocks and an allocation towards bonds. And the thought is, if you want to be more aggressive, it's higher stocks. If you want to be more conservative, it's higher bonds. We actually looked at it in the past 50 years of data. Your stocks on average, and this is a real return basis, had a real return of 7% annually, standard deviation or volatility of 5%. Bonds were slightly lower, 5% annual real return, 3% standard deviation. If you allocated it 80% S&P, 20% gold, and not saying this is your right mix, this is just looking at history, your annual return on that S&P and gold portfolio is going to be 6.7%, so 30 basis points less than the all-stock portfolio, and 2.7% on the standard deviation, so 30 basis points less than the 100% bond portfolio. That's just a data point. Like I said, everyone has their own allocation, but that's just something that may guide your investors in terms of what the right allocation is.
Yeah, and obviously history is always 2020. It's easy to go back and say, oh, you know, I bought Tesla in, you know, 2011 and, you know, sold in the middle of 2020. I'm a genius. And, you know, it's obviously we're always looking at that with very crystal vision. But it's interesting to see, you know, looking back, you know, on a 10-year average, because we did have some big spikes and drops in both of those markets. Yep. You know, what was it? You said it was 2011, 2012, that gold just was like on a 90-degree trajectory for a little bit.
Yep. Yeah, gold hit about 1900 in 2011 and then it's corrected all the way down to 1050 in 2015, and now it's back at 1800. I think another thing that's important to note too is as many asset classes are cyclical. Let's just look at 2000 till today. From 2000 up until 2010, you had the lost decade in stocks, where basically the S&P didn't do anything. And then gold, on the other hand, went up from 250 to about 1900 in 2011. And then you fast forward 2011 to 2022, gold basically didn't do anything. It went from 1900 down to 1050. Now it's back at 1800. You basically didn't make anything if you had held gold for the past 10 years. But stocks, on the other hand, went up fourfold from 1250 to 4800 on the S&P. So, you know, my personal thought is we're gonna have a correction in the stock market. It's been about 14 years since 2008 since we've had a big I guess, bust or correction in the stock market. I think everything's cyclical. I think stocks will likely struggle in the next couple of years. Gold may do well.
All right, awesome. Now, one question to kind of end this off. What are some things that, we talked about the things that positively can impact gold. What are some things that people need to look out for on the counterpoint to that? What are some things that can negatively affect precious metal prices? So that way, people can obviously, you need to have a whole well-rounded picture. They should know, inflation being what it is, people want to look for stores of value, and precious metals can offer that. Historically, they are stores of value. But what are some things to look out for that can negatively affect the prices of these things? So people, and I don't think it's necessarily so much of a thing where people want to sell, but obviously, if you're looking at a good time to maybe buy, if things are happening saying, okay, well, this is going to drop the price, I can get a better value. What are some markers that typically have, again, looking historically, negatively affected the prices of precious metals?
So yeah, some of the biggest corrections in the gold market were in 74 to 75, gold went down from 200 to 100. And in 1980, gold went down from about 1800 to about 300. And the reason that happened too is you have to look at the current inflation rate and the Fed funds rate too. So the current inflation, as we mentioned, is about 7.1%. Fed funds rate is about 4.5%. If the Fed is able to increase rates to higher than inflation, like what Paul Volcker did in the 1980s, and he increased the Fed funds rate to 5% or 500 basis points above the inflation rate, and then it caused gold to crash, because now people could all of a sudden get a real yield by holding treasuries or having a savings account or something like that. And then obviously we mentioned gold is a non-yielding asset. So people said, well, would I rather have a non-yielding asset or something that yields? So if the Fed is able to do that, and like I said, the Fed funds rate's 4.5%, inflation 7.1. If, let's say, Jerome Powell pulled a Paul Volcker, that would mean that the Fed funds rate is now 12%. Your 30-year mortgage will probably be 14%. Not saying he will do this, but that would likely cause gold to crash.
Okay, great. I think that's kind of a good place to leave this off, of giving people a well-rounded idea of what the different options are for investing in precious metals. What are some of the benefits? What are some of the options to do it? What are some things to look at that increase the price and decrease the price? So I think it was a great way to look at it. I definitely learned some stuff with regard to how this stuff works as well. So I really appreciate you, Patrick, being on with us today. If people want to reach out to you to learn more, if they're interested in investing in precious metals, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend everyone check out Precious Metals. If you like that physical side, check out APMEX. That's APMEX.com. If you're open to that vaulted solution, check out onegold.com. That's onegold.com. And if you have any questions about precious metals or precious metals IRAs, feel free to email me directly. I'm at Patrick, patrick.yip, that's YIP, at APMEX.com.
All right. Thank you very much, Patrick. This has been another edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining today, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Tune in next week for more investing tips and strategies.
Want to hear more episodes of the Alternative Investing Advantage? Search podcast at AdvantaIRA.com and subscribe.